Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
March. For most of the world, there's really only one movie opening this week.
What about us taking an adventure east?
Like Queen?
On the surface, Crazy Rich Asians is an adaptation of a successful novel. The kind of book that you rip through in a few days on vacation and put down thinking, yep, this will definitely end up as a movie.
Can't afford this. So your family is rich?
We're comfortable.
Except the entire cast, setting, and culture of the book is Asian. So saying that this'll definitely end up as a Hollywood film when the book was a hit in 2013 would have been a stretch, to say the least. As you might imagine, this movie means everything to millions of people who've waited decades to see themselves really represented on the big screen. But will it be a one-off before it's replaced in theaters with the latest superhero movie featuring a white guy? And will I be able to answer that question for you a week from now just by looking at the box office receipts? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
The amount of pride that it brings to see yourself represented on screen, represented in media, and again, celebrated, praised. I don't even know how to describe it. It's so moving.
Madeline Chung is an Asian-Canadian freelance journalist who's covered Crazy Rich Asians for Flare.com. Madeline, do you remember the first Asian person you saw on TV growing up?
Yes. Christy Yamaguchi was the first one that I saw. Either that or the yellow Power Ranger from Power Rangers. But back then, I didn't even realize that, like, how racist that kind of was, that the yellow one was the Asian one and right. The black one was the black one. But anyways, that's a whole different story. Christy Yamaguchi for sure was, like, the one that stood out for me. I saw her on screen and I was like, Mom, I want to be a figure skater. I want to be just like her. I changed my middle name, changed in quotes, my middle name to Christy and signed everything Madeline Christy Chung because I was so obsessed with her. And it wasn't until probably earlier this year that I realized, oh my God, the reason that I loved Christy Yamaguchi so much was because she looked like me. And when you're younger, I mean, I was like maybe 5 or 6, like I didn't really understand that. But back then, I didn't see anyone at all who looked like me on television. So this was a huge deal. Now looking back on it, I'm like, yeah, that was like kind of groundbreaking that we saw an Asian woman who was celebrated and praised for being herself and not being portrayed in a stereotypical light, which is what we're used to seeing in Hollywood and on the big screen.
So when you were growing up, aside from Christy Yamaguchi, what were some of the representations of Asian people that you saw?
Oh my gosh. In high school, I feel like every single Asian actress I was compared to. People would be like, oh my gosh, you look like Lucy Liu. Like, I look nothing like Lucy Liu. I don't have freckles. I do not look like her. And they were like, you look like Keiko from Gilmore Girls. She played Lane, Rory's best friend. And they were saying I looked like all these people. And I'm like, I don't look like them. Just because I'm Asian doesn't mean I look like them. The same way that just because you're white doesn't mean like you look like every single white person on TV or on screen. So I always kind of got compared to them and I kind of resented it because, for example, Lane on Gilmore Girls, she was like really nerdy Korean with like a really, really strict mom who was super religious and wouldn't let her date anyone except if he was like a Korean guy who went to church. Or it was like the super hypersexualized like Lucy Liu in Charlie's Angels and stuff. And I was kind of like, I don't really feel like I fit into any of those boxes. I feel like I'm my own person, but I feel like I'm not being represented on screen. And it's tough because seeing those representations, people are thinking that because I look like them, that's the way I am.
What does that do to the way you behave and present yourself in public?
Oh my God, I wanted to make myself more white. Like I grew up in a predominantly white town. I grew up in Whitby and everyone around me was white. And I grew up with a single mom. I have to say she comes from Mauritius and she's extremely progressive in the sense that she does come from like a tiny tropical island in the middle of nowhere where, you know, they aren't as progressive. So she did a really good job of raising me Canadian, but still sticking to my morals and values. So I remember when I was younger, she would have me go around and like tell all my classmates about Chinese New Year, for example, to kind of teach everyone about my culture because no one really was like me. I went to a Catholic school. When I was younger, that was fine. But as I grew older, I was like, oh, I'm standing out. Like, I'm sticking out like a sore thumb. It's making me feel really different and really isolated from everyone else. And I didn't like that. So I tried to whitewash myself. I tried to not associate myself with Asian characters. If people were like, oh, my God, do you speak Chinese? Do you do this? And I was like, no, like French was my first language. I speak French. And like trying to make myself more Canadian as opposed to Chinese. I look back on that and it makes me so sad that I used to be like that. It makes me embarrassed. Even like admitting to my mom reading that article on Flair, I was like, I hope she doesn't get upset. I hope she doesn't get mad because she tried to raise me to be proud of my roots. She did, but it was so tough because I was in this town where I just felt like I didn't fit in and no one was like me. And I just didn't know who I was or like where I belonged.
Yeah. How do you figure out from society who you should be and when it's okay to be the person that you really are? Like, when did the break come for you when you realized that you didn't have to put on a face and you could embrace the culture that you'd been growing up with?
I think that just came with age and time. I think it came from being with my relatives and learning more from them. Like nowadays, oh my gosh, I so wish I could speak Cantonese fluently because I want to speak with my elders. I think it was a matter of just kind of accepting that who I was and my family, being proud of them and, you know, being proud of my heritage, being proud of the countries where my family's come from. I don't know. It took time. Like, I can't pinpoint an exact moment. I know that seeing more Asians everywhere and being portrayed in a different light helped. So I think one example that I can think of is social media. When it kind of like bloggers first came on the scene, there were all these Asian bloggers popping up. And I was like, whoa, these are like real girls like me who love fashion and I can relate to them. And we have similar body types. You know, they're not like super tall, super skinny white girls. We have similar body types. I can wear the same types of clothes as them. I can relate to them. I can look up to them. And that kind of gave me something else to look at and to say, okay, this person looks like me. They're being praised again and celebrated. So that means maybe I'll be praised and celebrated for who I am too.
Why is crazy rich Asians so important?
Oh man, that's a loaded question. I mean,
it feels like it's important though.
It feels huge. Like
this is the biggest film in a while for the Asian audience.
Well, just look, like every day I log onto Twitter and I see how happy people are that this movie is coming out and the representation of it. And I'm seeing all Asians being like, finally, this is our time. This is our moment. And it's so true. Like when I first heard of the book, I dismissed it because I was like, oh, the crazy rich Asian stereotype. I'm like, screw that. I'm not going to read it. You know,
I judged
a book by its name, not by its cover. But yeah, I was just kind of like, no, it's just going to go into that stereotype. I don't want to read into it. It's going to make me, you know, feel bad about myself. But my friend was like, no, it's actually really, really good. Read it. So I went on a cruise, read it in like 2 days, as you said, beach read, read it in 2 days, got the next book, loved it. So the fact that this is an all Asian cast, it's directed by an Asian guy, and it's the first time in like 25 years that we've seen that. It's huge. And I'm hoping that this time around, because of social media and because we're seeing all these people expressing their feelings and their love and their pride, and we're seeing all these think pieces come out of how important this is, that it's really going to propel, you know, for more representation and diversity on screen. And not just Asian characters, but having Asian actors play roles, you know, just roles, regular roles. A superhero, it doesn't have to be just an Asian character. Yeah.
How does the story portray Asians in a way that's not the stereotypical way?
Well, we're seeing them from different walks of life, right? So we have Rachel, who's raised by a single mother. She's an American-born Chinese girl who's a teacher, and she falls in love with Nick Young, who's like from this really, I guess, old money family in Singapore. She discovers that he's from this crazy rich family. And I think what's really cool about the story is because we know the stereotype of the crazy rich Asians, but then we kind of have Rachel's side of the story where it's like, no, she's not a crazy rich Asian. She's an American-born Chinese girl, and she's kind of being thrown into this life that she's not used to. But I think a lot of people can relate to that story. I can kind of relate to Rachel in the sense that I'm a Canadian-born Chinese girl who was raised by a single mother. We weren't crazy wealthy, so like I can only imagine if I fell in love with a guy who like came from this billionaire family, what it would be like.
If it's taken 25 years from the Joy Luck Club to now for there to be, you know, a real Hollywood blockbustery type movie made with an Asian cast, why this one? What is it about this story that got Hollywood buying in?
I think because of that glamour, it's like Hollywood loves glamour, right? And I think someone was saying it's like kind of like the Asian Kardashians, if you think about it. And we all love hate the Kardashians, but we still kind of read into it. I think that because it has this glamorous feel to it and it's like this big blockbuster production, it's what's going to make this successful, too, is that it's not just appealing to Asians. It's appealing to a mass audience. Everyone's talking about it. I have so many friends who are not Asian who've already seen the movie, and they're like, I loved it. I laughed. I cried. I cheered. It was great. And it's just like the typical rom-com, except this time around, it has Asian actors, and it's telling stories from different walks of life for Asians. The amount of pride that it brings to see yourself represented on screen, represented in media, and again, celebrated, praised. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it's so moving. I so wish that this had happened to me when I was younger so that I didn't really resent my roots and want to whitewash myself. But I'm so happy that I get to see it in my lifetime. And I'm happy that it's happening now because hopefully younger kids are now like, wow, I matter. I think it's already going to be a huge success. We're going to see what the numbers are like this weekend, but it has what, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes already.
Yep.
So obviously it's doing well. The critics are saying it's great. So I'm really hoping that it's going to be a change this time around.
Yeah, well, this is the other thing, right? Because when these sorts of movies get made that are kind of labeled, you know, culturally important,
yep.
And this is, you know, the first movie that has this kind of cast, or the first movie where we cast a real person of this ethnicity in this role, the Ghostbusters remake was a great example where they did it with four women.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes feel like those are the movies that they give one shot to, you know, right? Like, if this doesn't succeed, like, we'll try it. We'll try it because it's time. And if this doesn't succeed, then what happens to all the other movies that we were planning to make with an Asian cast?
Well, John M. Chu, the director of the film, he said to the New York Times this past weekend, he said, you know what? We're going to see how it goes. If it works out this time around, we have about like six other movies waiting to be greenlit with Asian lead actors. And if it doesn't, then we try again. And I think that's kind of a good way to look at it. Asians are persistent, you know, and like, I feel like if they want to do it, they're going to do it. And like, there's a lot of us in the world. So we're seeing how many people this is impacting and the response from it. So I think that, yeah, they're going to want to appeal to more Asians, especially Asian Americans and Asian Canadians.
Are there any signs that beyond this film, the culture is shifting to more representation, not just of Asians, but of all sorts of cultures?
I think so. We've seen on television, too. There's Black-ish, right? We saw Kim's Convenience, one of the very few TV shows I could sit and watch with my family that we all laughed at and like understood and related to. I remember like we were binge watching it, and then Modern Family came on afterwards, and we all kind of sat there like, oh, we don't understand this. We don't get this. This is like white people lives. And like some people just left the room because they were like, I don't care to watch this. So I think there are shifts. I think it's important for media to embrace this shift again by putting different types of people on magazine covers. And we're seeing that this September, like the diverse September covers are amazing. I just hope that people are doing it from a good place and from honest intentions, not to sort of jump on the bandwagon or feel like they have to do it because that's the right thing to do. Like, I feel like I used to work in media, and I remember we used to talk about diversity and representation specifically in relation to, let's say, body types. So we'd have to think about, okay, we need to not only focus on one body type, but like include different types and show diversity. But we'd have to like actively think to put in, let's say we're doing a shopping gallery of like winter coats. We'd have to put in coats for plus size women too, right? And those are things that you don't think about because we're so used to seeing this one thing. And it got to the point where like for some of us, we're like, okay, we feel like we're doing this just because we have to. And how do we switch that into just making that the norm?
Well, you have to reach a tipping point where it's just there, right?
Yeah,
it just
exists
the way roles for white men exist in film.
Exactly. And I think that the way to kind of lead us into that is by putting these people on the covers, putting more representation and diversity into mainstream media. So that way it becomes the norm and people get used to it and the younger generation gets used to it. And in turn, we'll just think of it as a normal thing.
On the one hand, it's really good that we're making a big deal out of this movie because it is a big deal.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it makes it feel like such an anomaly that we're making a big deal of it. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think of it as an anomaly because I'm just so happy about it. I'm just celebrating it and being like, yes, it's finally happening. You know what I mean? It's not like I don't see it as like pressure of, you know, being that one film that we're counting on. I don't see it as like, oh, it's just this big thing that it's everyone's going to talk about and it's going to blow up. Like, I just want to savor every single moment of it because it's like this hasn't happened in 25 years. Like, I don't remember this happening. If it's just going to be this one time, which I really hope it won't be, then yeah, I want to savor it for all that it is.
And you're going to see it tonight?
I'm going to see it tonight, yeah.
Where are you going? How are you doing it?
I'm
going
to go Yonge and Dundas with some Asian friends, of course. I have to see it with my crew.
How many of you are going?
Oh, it's just a couple of us. Yeah, it's just going to be a couple of us. But
you think it's going to be emotional?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I got emotional just seeing like Constance Wu on the cover of Fashion Magazine. Like that was huge for me. And I don't know, even seeing the red carpet of like the, you know, the whole cast, the whole Asian cast, that was emotional for me too. Because again, like I used to work in media and I covered red carpet all the time. And they always used to say, try to include as many diverse people as you can in like your roundups of your galleries. And I'm like, well, there's only so many. You know what I mean? Like there's only so many diverse people on these red carpets. I'm throwing in people in there and they're not well known. And then you guys are chirping me because you're like, oh, this gallery's not doing well because it's not known people.
Right.
You know? So it's like...
The vicious cycle of media representation
yes,
sometimes.
Exactly, exactly. But you know what? Now these people are being known, and that's a wonderful thing.
Well, enjoy the movie. I hope it's great.
Thank you.
That was The Big Story. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can find our whole catalog of episodes on our website, thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can listen to them right there, or you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can rate us there. You can review us. And please hit us up on social media so we can let you know what we're working on, and you can let us know what we should be working on. You can find us at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. Our producer is Claire Brassard. Megan Coley is our social media editor. Stephanie Phillips is our research assistant. And Ryan Clark is our editing assistant. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening.